Hi, everyone, and welcome to Documentation Station. I'm Steve Welton. Thank you for joining me here on this podcast, which focuses on topics hopefully helpful to behavioral health clinicians. I hope you'll find today's episode valuable and maybe even a little entertaining. If you want to learn more about me and my consulting practice, you can find me at weltonconsulting.com. I've had something floating through my head these past few days. It came up as an outcome of a conversation I had with a clinician about their practice and their statement that they don't assess clients before they start treating them. It's not the first time I've heard some version of that said. Some clinicians don't come right out and say it quite like that, but it comes out more as a, I don't like to do the assessment part of therapy, or I don't like using structured assessment instruments as part of assessment, both of which I totally get. Some will even say that they don't think that assessments are all that helpful to them or their practice. That one I don't quite get, but I try and keep an open mind on it. I understand that doing assessment can feel laborious at times, as we sift through the stories of our clients, which may or may not have any bearing on what they are currently experiencing. And certainly, I have experienced clients who are terrible historians, don't get their stories right, or, you know, they tell you the version of the story they want you to know as opposed to, you know, what happened. But I don't do assessments before I start therapy is a very firm statement and approach. I had a conversation a couple of months ago with a clinician who also said this, and when I asked them why not, their response was a combination of, it's not helpful to me, followed by a, you know, most therapists don't do assessments. So the good news is that over my auditing career and now my consulting practice, I've been fortunate enough to review and work with a variety of clinicians who do indeed assess before they treat, to know that the global statement that most clinicians don't has not been proven to be true based on empirical evidence. But since I had just went through this conversation again in the past few days, I thought I would journey down this road for a bit. As psychotherapists, can we treat someone without assessing them first? Now, the knee-jerk reaction is, of course. Sure, it happens all the time. But does it? You know, even in the emergency department of a community hospital where individuals arrive in full-on psychosis or in the depths of suicidal depression, well, they're getting assessed as they are getting wheeled into a room. You know, but of course, the converse is also true. Some of you listening may be folks who have, you know, taken the path of avoiding the completion of an assessment at the outset of treatment. You're leaning on your years of professional experience, and you can now recognize individual patterns that you've treated before, and you know instinctively how to address them in your practice. The assumption is that your technique addresses the complex symptoms of today, regardless of the central question of why those symptoms are present in this individual who sits in front of you. Yeah, I get it. It saves time. Client doesn't really want to talk about what happened to them 20 years ago or more, and you don't want to try and sort out what led them to the now. You just want to address the now. And there are certainly modalities that are built sort of around the premise of working this way. Solution-focused brief therapy is a great example of this. They go straight for the symptom reduction and not for longer range treatment. You may also find that you're doing a lot of EAP work where you feel like you really don't have time to do much of an assessment. The problem with skipping the assessment process, of course, is that when you take that shortcut, you step into an unknown world without any real sense of where you, and more importantly, your client, are really going. As psychologist and EMDR trainer Nadine van der Linden once wrote, therapy without assessment and formulation is like taking an unknown journey with someone else's well-being without a map or a guidebook. So yeah, it's like that. Now, of course, as we all know, there is a basic assumption from insurance companies that a psychotherapist is conducting an assessment which leads to a diagnosis, which establishes medical necessity, which then meets the requirements of accessing health insurance benefits to pay for the therapy. I did another podcast on medical necessity. You may want to listen to that if you haven't already. But that's the process. And if you take insurance for payment and are contracted with those insurance companies, I hope you're following that path. But I'm not naive. And while I mentioned that I've seen a lot of good clinicians that do thorough assessments, I've also looked at enough treatment records over the years to know that this is far from a universal practice. There are plenty of clinicians who do not believe they need to do an assessment prior to starting treatment, even going so far as to give a client a diagnosis based on nothing more than intuition. Now, I'm not against intuition. Psychotherapy can, and at some level, relies on our capacity for instinctual practice. But diagnosis is not, and establishing a treatment pathway requires information. Information gathered in an assessment. Jeff Young, the founder of Schema Therapy, in his book Creative Methods in Schema Therapy, wrote, "I've always felt the case conceptualization, if it's off, the treatment won't work. That it's actually central to guiding what you do. If you don't understand what happened in a patient's childhood and adolescence as they're growing up, you can't get them better." Young's thoughts echo what we know from the world of trauma-informed treatment, where the notion is that we need to have some idea of the experience of trauma for us to understand how it informs today. In SAMHSA's manual on the topic entitled Trauma-Informed Care in Behavioral Health Services, we are reminded that while exposure to trauma is more common than we think, somewhere over 50% of people surveyed in the general population experience trauma, that the rates are even higher with individuals with behavioral health or substance use disorder diagnoses. And that's not surprising at all, right? but not addressing the traumatic stress symptoms can effectively impede our capacity to be successful in treatment. When we don't complete an assessment of the client's history, their trauma, and other related symptoms can go unidentified, which leads us towards treating current symptoms out of context. The SAMHSA manual points out that unrecognized and unaddressed trauma symptoms can lead to poor engagement in treatment. And then poor engagement can then lead to premature termination of the treatment, greater risk of relapse of symptoms or substance use, or worse symptoms. Of course, as we think about this assessment process and we have some experience with it, we come to learn that our clients may not always recognize trauma as trauma, just like they may not understand certain resiliency factors as such. This is why collecting their history becomes so important. How was their home experience? What were their family relationships like? How did they do in school? How were their successes celebrated? How were their failures considered? Is the family intact or blended, and how was that managed? What are their cultural influences? What did they experience related to that? Or even their religious ones, were they positive? Were they strict? Did they create angst? Health and behavioral health in the family of origin can also play an important role in the formative experience of your client. Parent or siblings, chronic illness, health, or premature death can provide its own set of unique challenges, but can also be a tremendous resiliency factor. We don't spend some time understanding about our client milestones and experiences of childhood and adolescence, and we count on the client reporting it when we ask them if they've ever experienced trauma. We are left with the incomplete story from which to develop an effective treatment plan. Of course, I understand that not everyone holds the development of treatment plans with the same high esteem that I do. I won't try and relitigate that topic here today. I just know that a good treatment plan comes from good assessments. And insurance companies hold a high regard for both. And good assessments generally lead to better outcomes in psychotherapy. Yeah. That's not just me saying that. In a meta-analysis study completed by Poston and Hansen at Purdue University, which was published in the American Psychology Association Journal in 2010, nearly two-thirds of clients in various studies showed significantly better outcomes when a comprehensive assessment was conducted, as opposed to those treatment episodes where that was not the case. What's included in the assessment is its own conversation that I won't cover in any detail today, but let's just assume that it includes why they are in treatment. What are their symptoms? How long have they experienced them? Any current use or history of substance use? An assessment of risk. a social history covering a wide variety of topics. A current medical history, and a family history of medical, behavioral health, and substance use. If insurance is covering the costs, you really want to make sure your assessment is complete enough to diagnose your client, establish medical necessity, and develop the treatment plan. But even if it's a self-pay situation, realize that you are still responsible for a person's care. You are responsible for the clinical decisions you make and the direction you take in treatment. Your best approach will still be with taking the time to understand the context of your client's symptoms by completing an assessment first. This is Documentation Station.